Acharya Astotra Sattva Sri Sriman is Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya is Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Raj Granta Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Sri Harinam Sankirtan Ki. Shri Jagannath Baladev Lady Subhadra Mahani Ki Jai. Shri Nitai Gaur Chandra Ki. Gaur Premanandi, glories to the assembled devotees, glories to the assembled devotees, glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Microphone stand is illustrating my present condition here. Anyway, it's intoxicated from the kirtan. So, Canto 3, Chapter 25. The chapter's entitled The Glories of Devotional Service, text number 29. Yo yogam bhagavad, yo yogo bhagavad bhano. Yo yogo bhagavad bhagavad bhano. That's not right. How's that? Somebody chant the first line again. No, that's not right. Yo yogo bhagavad bhano. Nirvanatmam stayojitaha Kridrisha kati changani Yatastavava bodhanam Yo yogo bhagavad bhano Nirvanatmam stayojitaha Kridrisa kati changani Yatastavava bodhanam Yo yogo bhagavad bhano Nirvanatmam stayojitaha Kriddisat kati changani Yatastavava bodhanam
Yo 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 go bhagavad bhano
Yo yo go bhagavad bhano
Nirvanatmam svayodita
Kati changani Yatastava bhavodhanam Ladies. Anyone else? Yeah. Which? Yoga. Mystic yoga process.
Mystic yoga process.
Bhagavad
Bhana.
aiming at the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nirvana Atmam. O embodiment of Nirvana. Twaya. By you. Yudita. Explained. Kridisa. Of what nature? Kati. How many? Cha. And. Angani. Branches. Yata. By which? Tattva. Of the truth. Avabodhanam. Understanding. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. So how should we do it? I'll just read everything and then you read? Okay. The mystic yoga system, this is Devahutiya speaking, the mystic yoga system, as you have explained, aims at the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is meant for completely ending material existence. Please let me know the nature of that yoga system. How many ways are there by which one can understand in truth that sublime yoga? Purport. This is a little lengthy. It's about a full page or a little more. There are different kinds of mystic yoga systems aiming for different phases of the Absolute Truth. The Jnana Yoga system aims at impersonal Brahman effulgence. And the Hatha Yoga system aims at localized personal aspect, the Paramatma feature of the Absolute Truth. Whereas Bhakti Yoga, or devotional service, which is executed in 9 different ways, headed by hearing and chanting, aims at complete realization of the Supreme Lord. There are different methods of self-realization. But here, Devahuti especially refers to the Bhakti Yoga system, which has already been primarily explained by the Lord. The different parts of the Bhakti Yoga system are hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping the Lord in the temple, accepting service to Him, carrying out His orders, making friendship with Him, and ultimately surrendering everything for the service of the Lord. The word nirvanatmam is very significant in this verse. Unless one accepts the process of devotional service, one cannot end the continuation of material existence. As far as jnanis are concerned, they are interested in jnana yoga. But even if one elevates oneself, after a great performance of austerities, to the Brahman effulgence, there is chance of falling down again into the material world. Therefore, jnana yoga does not actually end material existence. Similarly, regarding the Hatha Yoga system, which aims at the localized aspect of the Lord, Paramatma, it has been experienced that many yogis, such as Vishwamitra, fall down. But bhakti yogis, once approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead, never come back to this material world, as is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Yad gatvav na vivartante. Upon going, one never comes back. Taktva deham purna janma naiti. After giving up this body, one never comes back again to accept a material body. Nirvanam does not finish the existence of the soul. The soul is ever existing. Therefore, nirvana means to end one's material existence. And to end material existence means to go back home, back to Godhead. Sometimes it is asked, how the living entity falls down from the spiritual world to the material world. Here is the answer. Unless one is elevated to the Vaikuntha planets, directly in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is prone to fall down, either from the impersonal Brahman realization or from an ecstatic trance of meditation. Another word in this verse is Bhagavad Bhana. It is very significant. Bhana means arrow. The Bhakti Yoga system is just like an arrow aiming to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhakti Yoga system never urges one towards impersonal Brahman effulgence or to the point of Paramatma realization. This bhana or arrow is so sharp and swift that it goes directly to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, penetrating the regions of impersonal Brahman and localized Paramatma. End of purport. Good luck. It's long.
Svevišnje božanske osobe. Sistem bhakti joge nikadne vodi osobu prema impersonalnom Brahmanu ili do paramatma realizacije. Ova vana ili strijela je tako oštra i brza da odlazi direktno do središnje božanske osobe prolazeći kroz regiju impersonalnog Brahmana i lokaliziranog paramatma.
Om Agyan Timidandasya Kinajana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tatsmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Staptitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Swam Padantikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So, Devahuti, she's inquiring from her son, who is Kapiladev, who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nice to have that kind of son, yes? Supreme Lord is your son. So she's taking advantage of that, what we say, special boon, to learn what is the goal of life. Her husband, Kardama Muni, he's finished with material life. He's already left. He performed his duty within the household life. He served his wife nicely and gave her whatever she needed in a little to live happily. And before he left, he produced a son who was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord incarnated in this particular family to teach, well, this is the process of Sankhya Yoga, that process. Or one understands the absolute truth. So here, in her inquiry, she's asking a very, important question. There's so many questions you can ask. But she's not asking questions in order to how to better her material life. Or how to find some, comfort within material existence. She's not even asking about things that can elevate one on the spiritual platform. She's asking for the ultimate goal of life. She wants to know that process. She knows there's so many processes for elevation, but she wants to know that one, which is the supreme of all processes. That process which will bring one to perfectional stage. And that process that will take one to the ultimate goal of life, to go back home, back to Godhead. So, Srila Prabhupada, and in the first canto, in speaking about the ultimate goal of life, which is to return to the spiritual world, to render transcendental loving service to the Lord eternally in one's spiritual body, explains very few, he uses the word very few, men, very few individuals, actually aspire for such goal. Manusanam sahavseshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam abhisiddhanam kaschid mam veti tatvataha. In the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains how rare it is that ultimately one really wants the perfection of life. Many persons come to spiritual life. And many persons make progress, but very few are actually, attain liberation. And actually, even those who attain liberation, hardly one, Krishna says, hardly one knows me. And in the same chapter again, he says, I know everything that's happened in the past, all that has happened in the present, and all things yet to come. And I also know all living entity. Krishna gives his position as the supreme, a force in existence, one who knows everything, one who is everywhere, ultimately one who controls everything. And then he says, in the end, no one knows me. He doesn't even use the word hardly in that verse. He says, no one knows me. So to know Krishna is not a very easy thing, and it's very rare to achieve such states of what we say perfectional consciousness. But here, Devahuti, she wants the ultimate goal of life. Prabhupada points out in the purport that there are so many processes of elevation. And one can practice great austerities and penances. We have the example of Vishwamitra Muni. Vishwamitra Muni was a Kshatriya. His life is interesting in that he's had many adventures. And one adventure was that with all his armies, he was a powerful king. And he had so many powerful armies. So one day he came to the hermitage of Vishishta Muni. Now, Vishishta Muni was a Brahmin, and he welcomed Vishwamitra Muni. And he wanted to serve nicely, not only Vishwamitra Muni, but his entire army of so many soldiers and so many horses and elephants. The whole regalia was there. So, he had a cow, a special cow. It was a common Danu cow. And this cow could produce anything simply by the desire of Vishishta Muni. He would simply chant mantras and request the cow to produce something. The cow would do it. It was a Sarabi cow. Somehow it was here. Is that nature or is that our nature? Which nature is that? What's coming from below or coming from above? I'm not sure about that one. Okay. We don't want it to rain. That's because when it rains here, it gets flooded. Okay, so... So he chanted these mantras, and the cow produced this huge, fabulous, gigantic feast for all the soldiers. It was an amazing feast, and all of Vishwamitra's soldiers were nicely fed. They were given all the best accommodations, and Vishwamitra was impressed. He wasn't so happy. He was more like impressed. Wow, I thought I was such a powerful person. But look at this person. He can do the most amazing things. I'm a Kshatriya. So he's a Brahmin. Obviously, I should have that cow because the best is offered to the king. So he said to Vishishta Muni, after thanking him, he said, I have a request. Yes, what is your request? Give me your cow. Vishishta wasn't about to part with his cow because he needed his cow for all his worship. Whatever puja he did, he depended on his cow to provide the paraphernalia. And so, politely but determinedly, he refused. And then Vishwamitra got angry. And he forcibly tried to take the cow away. So he got a rope, tied it around the cow, and started to pull. The cow had tears in its eyes, and he looked at his master, Vishishta, saying, do something. I don't want to go with this person, you know. And so Vishishta just chanted mantras. And from the udder of the cow, all these gigantic personalities with full weapons came out. And he produced his whole army, and it destroyed all of Vishwamitra's army. And Vishwamitra was amazed. And he was humbled somewhat. He's not very easy to become. He's not a person you know to be very humble. But powerful Kshatriya. Anyway, after realizing he was completely defeated and couldn't do anything, He thought, you know, I'm a Kshatriya, but a Brahmin's more powerful than a Kshatriya. So let me become a Brahmin. So he gave up his position as a great king and wanted to become a powerful Brahmin. So he meditated. He started doing meditations. Prabhupada describes the meditations he did were impossible to match. He would sit in the middle of the summertime in the hot blazing sun, and he would light fires all around him, and he would sit in the middle and be fires all around, and he would do his meditation, and personal meditation. And in the wintertime, when it was very cold, he would go to the lake and immerse himself up to his neck in ice-cold water and do his meditation. And he was determined to get, what we say, the power of the austerities that come from this type of meditation. But, Haribol, Indra didn't like what he saw, because the demigods, they're sometimes concerned that if one performs austerities and penances, then they're looking for their position. And they're very attached to their position in many cases. So Indra sent one society girl named Menaka to distract his meditation. And she came along and tinkling of their ankle bells and then Vishwamitra was attracted. And because he was attracted, he lost his, what we say, meditation. And he actually married Menaka. It's a famous story. Prabhupada talks about that. And they produced one girl, her name was Sakuntala. And the life of this Sakuntala is described in a novel in Indian culture. But then after living in household life for some time, he was thinking, you know, I used to be this powerful yogi performing all these austerities. Now look at me. Anyway, I'll go back to my austerities. So he left everything and started performing his austerities again. And this time he was determined not to fall down. He was so determined. And again, Indra decided to send another girl. Her name was Rumba, Prabhupada describes. And she came, tinkling up the ankle bells and so many gestures. This time Vishwamitra became angry. And he had the power of his meditation that he had been performing. So he raised the fiery element in his body, and between his eyes he burnt her into crisp. It was like she was overcooked. Burnt pakora, finished. Maybe potato. Completely, you know, annihilated. And then as soon as that happened, all his power were gone. He fell down. He was like an ordinary person, nothing. Because it's explained, his attraction and repulsion are the same. It's two opposites on the spiritual, on the, what we say, material nature. The material nature is working in terms of opposites. So there's good, there's bad, there's cold, there's hot. There's beauty, there's ugly, this is the relative world. So where there is attraction, there's also aversion, which is another side of the same coin, which means it's also material. So his consciousness was again dropped down to the lowest form of material consciousness. Prabhupada uses this story to show that all the other processes of elevation cannot, what we say, protect one from material, what we say, infection or material attachment. The yogis, or the gyanis, we might say. Let's go back. The karmis. The karmis, they're full of all material desires. Karmi is one who simply wants to satisfy their senses and enjoy the satisfaction of the senses in material life. That's a karmi. Gyani is a person who simply wants liberation. So they perform austerities, penances, and do all those forms of meditation. And ultimately they can also move forward on the spiritual platform. They can attain Brahman realization. Well, Prabhupada says Brahman realization. He said, if I tell you, he gives an example of Brahman, if I tell you to come and live in this open field here all by yourself eternally, would you like that? Illustrating that, what is Brahman realization? It's simply one is freed from the suffering of material energy, but there's no relationship. There's no, what we say, activity. There's no spiritual activity. And therefore, because the soul by nature is sentient, again, one has to fall down into the material pole. Aruna Krishna Padam Padam Padantiyada. Again, they fall down. Nadritya Uskraya Mangrayaha. That although these gyanis and the yogis also, what are the yogis? The yogis want power. They perform austerities to get power. And they're powerful, many of them. I remember when I was in New Vrindavan, one mystic yogi came to show his power to all of us. He was a big guy, very big guy. And he explained that he had mystic powers and he could do what we say. And he would like to know if we would like to sit in a demonstration performed by him and he would show some of his powers. Of course, we weren't so interested, but since he was a guest and he was pretty persistent, we thought, all right, let's give him a chance. So it was the middle of winter. He came along with his girlfriend. It wasn't his wife. His girlfriend was there. So they came and we had a little private group. There was about 20 devotees there. And the first thing he did was he went into this meditation. And he said, after some time in my meditation, you come and you check my pulse and see if you can find any pulse. So we did that. He went, and then everyone, the devotee came up there. There was no heartbeat, no pulse. Stopped his heart. Wow, far out. We weren't sure if he was dead or alive. Anyway. So then he came out of it, and then he got a light bulb. And he just went, and it became like powder. Wow, that's really an amazing feat. So one very senior devotee said, you know, this was New Vrindavan. It's always been an interesting place in many ways, sometimes interesting in the wrong way, but he said, that's probably what his girlfriend does to him. So that was, no one was really impressed with that. And then he got a piece of rebar, but this thing they use for construction, these big iron bars they use for building buildings. So he took it and went, put it behind his neck and went, he bent it just like a piece of spaghetti, you know. Really easy. It was like effortless. So we were thinking, okay, when is this going to get over, you know? So we can get back to devotional service anyway. So nobody was really impressed, you know, I mean, but we wanted to honor his whatever talents he has. So he said he could do one more thing. And it was the middle of winter. It was really cold and there was a lot of snow on the ground. He said that you have somebody sit in one of your vehicles, a car, and he'll hold the bumper of the car, and then the car could just start up and try to drive away, and he can hold the car back. So his whole thing was like all this, this physical tejas. So we gave him a chance with that one too, but he blew it because it was too slippery. It was all ice there. So that was the end of the yoga performance. And after seeing that, we just realized what Prabhupada's purports are all about. It's like, they're simply magic. You know, to do some, what we say, super mundane feat in order to impress people. Because yogis really are looking for power. They want to somehow or other control the material energy in order to get power, to not be affected by the material energy or to impress others by their their yoga feats. And there was one magician back in the early days of the 20th century, or his name was Houdini. He was a magician. And they would take him and they would put chains all around him, box, and wrap the box in chains and throw him in a river. And then he would get out like that. So he said, when he heard about others who were performing all these austerities, these yogis, he says, it's all magic. If you know the science, it's just magic. That's all. How to manipulate the material energy. So the karmis are full of material desires. The jnanis, they want liberation. That's a material desire. And the yogis, they want power. That's a material desire. But the bhakti yogis, as is illustrated here, they only want to serve the Lord for the pleasure of the Lord. So a bhakti yogi is the best of all yogis. Therefore, Devahunti wants to know what is that process that is the perfection of all processes. And she's inquiring from her son. It's not that she's taking advantage of the opportunity that her son's there, therefore there's no need to inquire. Inquiry is, we say, a very fundamental part of the whole process of devotional service. You read Srimad Bhagavatam or any of the Vedic literatures, what is it about? Inquiry. To ask questions that are relevant, not questions like, well, you know, what time's prashad? I mean, yeah, that's a practical question, it's important. But questions that are relevant to one's spiritual advancement, or questions that are relevant to how to become, you know, how to purify oneself from material attachments, material affections like that. So one should ask questions. The whole Bhagavatam actually is just questions and answers. That's all it is. Sonika Rish, who was given the position to represent all the sages at Namisharanya. When I went to Namisharanya, I heard the story that there were 88,000 sages during this meeting. Now, it's amazing how Sutta Goswami could speak to 88,000 sages and there wasn't any microphone. So that's what they told us. That's how many sages were there at the Namisharanya meeting. Anyway, he was representing the sages. And the sages formulated their questions and gave it to Shanaka. And Shanaka asked the questions, which are the basis of the whole Bhagavatam. And there's six questions that he asks. And Sutta Goswami is what we given the position as representing the spirit, the supreme spiritual master, in order to answer the questions. Sutta Goswami is qualified. Before he's given the questions, he's glorified for his position and his ability because he knows all shastras and can delineate the essence of all shastras in order to come to that essence. Same with Maharaj Parikshit. When Maharaj Parikshit asked Sukadeva Goswami, he asked them two questions. Two questions. After, you know, understanding all the processes of spiritual life, what is that process which is the best of all processes? What is the essence? What is the goal of all religious scriptures? He doesn't want to know all about religious scriptures or all the details. He wants to know the essence. And the second question he asks is, what is the duty of a man about to die? And Srila Prabhupada expands on that point by saying that this question is for every one of us. So these two questions, what is the best of all spiritual processes that one can reach the ultimate goal of life, and what is my duty in this world? Because everyone's about to die. Age is not what we say an indication of long life if you're young. Age has nothing to do with your duration of life. Because we see in Kali Yuga how the living entities can leave their body at any time. Even we see young. Just recently, Of course, there's different ways to see it, but just recently, one of our very wonderful Grihastha couple in America, their 4.5-year-old son, he came down with cancer and left his body. 4.5 years old. Everyone was shocked. The boy had some little bit of cancer when he was born. The doctors operated, said they had performed a successful operation, but somehow or other they didn't. And later on, one cell was discovered and again multiplied. So here's a situation where he's born in a devotional family. Of course, people give different analysis of the whole thing. But ultimately, 4.5, who expects 5-year-old children to leave their body? But this happens in Kali Yuga. So the most important questions were asked by Sukadeva Goswami, not those questions that are, what we say, how to, you know, to better one's material existence. And you find, and within religious circles, most questions, I'm not saying within our society, but in general, people are always wanting to approach God in order to, what we say, better their material situations. Or to get longevity of life, to get something that will satisfy their needs in the material world. But here, the real questions are, well, what is that process that will bring one back to the spiritual world? So it's important. Srinvata Swakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanaha Riddantos Yabadani Vidhunoti Srihitstatam. That Krishna, within the heart, when he sees one is seriously endeavoring and asks his relevant questions in order to purify themselves, then Krishna, within the heart, actually does the purification. Krishna also says that. Satatam kirtana. What is that verse? Tesham satata yuktanam vajitam priti purvakam tadami buddha yogam tam yena mam upiyantite. Those who actually worship me with devotion, then I personally give them the understanding. He doesn't say indirectly, he says me personally. I give them the understanding how they can come to me. Krishna directly takes charge of a devotee's life when a devotee worships the Lord for the ultimate principle. In the next verse, he says, Tesham evanukam partam aham agyana jam tamaha nasyayam yatma bhavasto gyana dipena basvata. He says, me, dwelling within your heart, I destroy all ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. So one who approaches the Lord for the purpose of what we say, purification of the heart, and ultimately come to the platform of pure devotional service. The soul by nature is pure. Savai pum samparo damo yato bhakti ahoksaje ahoituki apriyataya yatma supersedati. That was the answer to the first question that was given by Sanagarishta Sukadeva Goswami. What is the best of all processes? What is the goal of life? And he answers, the ultimate goal of life is to engage in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And then he explains, what is the nature of that process? It has to be a haitukiya priyata, unmotivated and uninterrupted. Sounds too much, right? Unmotivation and uninterrupted. But it's possible. And there's a secret. Sometimes we think we get overwhelmed by the very lofty statements within the scriptures on how the ultimate principle of spiritual life seems to be so much beyond the normal endeavors that we make in our spiritual life. But there, Srila Prabhupada explains a key secret how one can reach that goal simply by adopting a certain consciousness. And what is that consciousness? Prabhupada explains that when we describe pure devotion or pure devotees, he says there's two types of pure devotees. One who is purified from all material contamination, all material desires. They have reached a perfectional platform. There's no trace of material taints within their existence. But then he gives another, he says there's another kind of pure devotee, and that one who has pure desire. He says, develop pure desire, and then one can ultimately, what we say, reach the pure destination. What is pure desire? Pure desire means that I ultimately want the perfectional stage. So sometimes we think, should I pray for pure desire? Because what happens when you pray for pure desire? Watch out. It's scary. Krishna starts just taking everything away. Oh, no. I remember back in the old early days of Krishna consciousness and when we started out, devotees were saying that, my dear Lord, please take everything away from me. I want to be your pure devotee. Ah! And then Krishna starts doing it and they're saying, whoa, not so fast. According to my timetable, you can work, my dear Lord, but not yours. Therefore, there's a clause to my prayer that you have to go according to my state. But it doesn't work like that. But one should have faith. One should have faith that the Lord always does the best for his devotee. So making that pure desire means, or in making that prayer, to what we say, offer that desire, a pure desire to the Lord. And Krishna will gradually, or whatever way he wants to, bring one to the perfectional platform. Lord Brahma also prays that, like that. Prabhupada also says that one should make this prayer, my dear Lord, whatever it takes to become your pure devotee, whatever it takes. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj used to make this wonderful prayer. He would present it to the whole GBC body during the GBC meetings in Mayapur. And many other times, he would say, my dear Lord, we should pray like this. Whatever that is stopping me in my devotional service, in order to become to the stage of pure devotional service, whatever material things are in my way, whatever blocks, take it away. And whatever I need to become your pure devotee, to surrender to you completely, let that come. So two prayers. To pray for removal of all unwanted things and to bring those things that are necessary in order to achieve the goal of life. So this is the process of devotional service. So Devahuti, she was born of Swayambhuva Mano. She was one of the illustrious daughters of Swayambhuva Mano. Qualified materially, she had everything. The best of all families. She was beautiful by physical appearance. She had all good qualities. And she was... But she accepted a very simple life as her husband, Kardama Muni. And she gave it all up. And ultimately, Krishna rewarded her by giving her the best of all sons, the Supreme Lord. And then she had the opportunity to achieve the perfection of life. And Prabhupada, ultimately, as you go on in this section, she ultimately reaches Vaikuntha. She makes it to the spiritual world. So she wants to know what is the best of all process. Therefore, the process is to inquire and to apply the answers to one's day-to-day life. Like that. Okay, so there's about 9 minutes left. Any questions or comments? Anyone? Day after Rath Yatra. Or day... For me, that is. No questions? No questions. Okay. Time for breakfast. Oh, okay. Govinda Nandana. Okay, you can ask. Does it mention anywhere in the scriptures that the wife gets 50% of the husband's spiritual credits? Well, I've also heard it. I haven't seen any scriptural references, and I've also heard that as the husband makes advancement, also the family members also. It's, you know, that's true with, you know, with any relation. Just look what happened to Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was qualified to go back home, back to Godhead. But his mother, Suniti, she wasn't. But because somehow or other, she was an instrument in him taking up the path of devotional service. And because she was related. So it says that those who are dear to the Lord, therefore those who are dear to that person who is also dear, is also dear to the Lord. So one who is dear to another person also becomes dear to that Lord, to the Lord also. So friends, family members, and everyone in relationship to devotee also benefits. But specifically, I don't remember a scriptural reference. I know Prahlada Nanda Maharaj is a walking shastra. Do you have any reference on this one? I don't think there is one. I never heard of it. But you can understand that everyone benefits from one's devotional service. By association. Just like in our satsang here. You know, just by the association of others, we also benefit. We get inspiration and we also get, you know, the mercy of the Lord. It comes. So association allows one to take advantage of what we say, the mercy. And the best, they say, the better, it's mentioned in the scriptures, that when one associates with pure devotees, then one can also develop pure devotional service like that. The power of association is so strong. And similarly, the other way also works, that one associates with those who are very materialistic, one's spiritual life is impaired, or also it can also be, what we say, impeded and blocked. So, okay, you're concerned. Don't worry, your wife will get some of you. And you'll also get what she gives, what she does too. It's vice versa. Yes. Yes, you can ask a whole bunch. There's nobody else. Well, you can't approach the Lord unless you approach the Lord through his representative. So yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah, that's the process. Those who try to go directly to the Lord are unsuccessful, because Krishna creates the process for approaching him, and he empowers those who are qualified to be his representatives. So when we approach those who are representing him, we also approach him through that. And it's also safer that way and more beneficial, because the spiritual master is more merciful than the Lord, because he carries the Lord within his heart. Prabhupada used to say, you know, Krishna might say, well, who is that? But the spiritual master says, my dear Lord, please accept him. Then Krishna has to do it. He's bound by the love of his pure devotee. So it's even greater benefit to approach the Lord through his representative. That's the process, yeah. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.